political parties and ensure that they are mainstreaming anti-corruption issues in their political manifestos and their agenda. Why are we doing this? We have a background of Ghana's poor performance on the global corruption indicators, particularly the Corruption Perception Index that is done annually by the Transparency International. Over the years, we have seen stagnation in the scores of Ghana since 2020, indicating that the country is not making progress in its fight against corruption. Additionally, the IMF's last report on Ghana noted that while governance indicators were relatively strong compared to some of our peers, governance effectiveness is a challenge. Regulatory quality and control of corruption had deteriorated over the last 10 years. This has further compounded these challenges because we also have issues of weak public accountability and also citizen engagement in policy formulation, especially in budget planning and implementation. Ladies and gentlemen, recently, the 2023 round of the Open Budget Survey, Ghana scored 17 out of 100 in public participation in budgeting, which is not helpful. Again, a work by Etuahini Ejie and Frimpong has also shown that Ghana's economic challenges or debt crisis are as a result of endemic corruption prevailing in the public sector. Quite strangely, ladies and gentlemen, corruption and the fight against it does not show explicitly in the election conversations as Ghana nears another election on 7 December 2024. This is evidenced in two ways. First, political party proposals neither have an abundance of anti-corruption commitments, nor are commitments given prominence. The major political parties have a total of 32 anti-corruption commitments scattered in their manifestos. Ladies and gentlemen, out of the 32 commitments, only 4 are about enforcing or deploying existing anti-corruption legislation. This therefore makes it difficult for us to see how elections and anti-corruption issues are being integrated. Additionally, we have also cited the work by NCCE, and it has listed education, employment, health, roads, and infrastructure, and the economy as the top 5 ranked issues of concern towards the elections. citizen. Because if corruption is not addressed, it means that Ghana's development will be affected. Ladies and gentlemen, we do not seek to only drive up the issue of corruption in the election conversation, but we also want to secure commitments from the political parties and their flag bearers. As part of today's activities, we will examine the political party manifestos and promises on anti-corruption, and we'll lay out what we expect of these political parties and document their commitments to help us to hold them accountable to the campaign promises. The responsibility of securing a corruption-free Ghana is not limited to any one party. It is a shared duty that requires the active engagement of all stakeholders present. It is our expectation, ladies and gentlemen, that today's meeting will begin a fruitful process of moving forward together with a shared purpose of making leaders accountable to us through the commitment they make in their policy statements, and also ensure that citizens' voices are captured and implemented. As it is said, we can only do as much alone, but together as Ghanaians who are committed, we'll be able to do great exploits. I thank you once again for joining us today. I indulge you to engage fully and discuss openly and work collaboratively toward building an anti-corruption agenda that will hold strong through this election and beyond. And it is our prayer that today's discussion will lay the groundwork for meaningful change in our beloved country, Ghana. Once again, thank you for coming.
Thank you once again, the Executive Director for the Ghana Anti-Corruption Coalition, Beauty Emefa Nate. At this point, I'd like to acknowledge our partners and those who are making this possible, the Pledge Against Corruption campaign. We have the Ghana Anti-Corruption Coalition, we have the Ghana Integrity Initiative, the Africa Center for Energy Policy, ASEP, we have Imani, we have the Media Foundation for West Africa, the Natural Resource Governance Institute, we have the UK Aid, we have the Commonwealth and Development Office, SCDO, and of course we have you, you, and you. I must say also that we are live on the Joy News channel. We are live on Channel 1, also live on all our social media platforms, the Pledge Against Corruption Ghana social media platforms. So wherever you are, you can share and share and share. I'd also like to acknowledge the presence of a number of representatives for state agencies in this country. We have the Office of the Special Prosecutor, Mr. Samidako is here. Thank you so much for coming. We also have a rep from the Financial Intelligence Center. We have a representative from SRAJ. We have a representative from the Ministry of Food and Agriculture. The National Peace Council is here. And of course, representatives from the NPP, the NDC, the Movement for Change. We have GUM, the Ghana Union Movement. We have the CPP, the APC, and the New Force. Of course, we'll be introducing them shortly as they come as well. And then I would also want to acknowledge the presence of Send Ghana, the CSO's platform on SDGs, the Tax Justice Coalition, and of course, the UNDP. Thank you so much for making this possible. At this point, I'd like to welcome Ms. Clara Osei-Boateng, Governance Advisor for the FCDO, for a brief remark. Please, give her a round of applause as she comes.
Thank you very much, MFA. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Permit me to stand on the protocols established by Mrs. Nate and just share my brief comments. So first of all, I'd like to thank the organizers of this event, Ghana Anti-Corruption Coalition and their partners, Africa Center for Energy Policy and Ghana Integrity Initiative. The UK believes that the fight against corruption is essential to global progress. As noted in our 2023 government white paper on international development, corruption and illicit financial flows can undermine any government's ability to deliver services and public investments necessary for long-term development. Corruption reinforces geographical risk, finance violent conflicts, and undermine democratic and rule-based societies. Illicit financial flows enables activities of organized crime groups and terrorist organizations, which entrench instability, damage the environment, plunder natural resources, and hinder development objectives. Corruption affects all of us. No jurisdiction in this world is immune. It is an issue that needs to be addressed through partnership. This is why the UK is delighted to partner civil society organizations in Ghana, like GACC, GII, ASEP, Imani, CDD, and others to raise awareness, but importantly to mobilize citizens to demand commitments from those seeking office, to establish and to explain themselves policies that they have in place when they are voted into power to deal with corruption. The UK believes that civil society organizations with their local knowledge and expertise in policy development are well placed to bring to the attention of the Ghanaian voter the commitment political parties are making in respect of corruption during this election to enable them make informed decisions, but importantly, to also enable them to hold them to account after the elections. Our discussions and dialogues about corruption should not end here, but most importantly, to empower civil society to ask the relevant questions after the elections to hold the government in power to account. This is why we have committed over £7 million through our Ghana Governance Program and the Serious and Organized Crime Programs for the next 5 years to support credible elections and anti-corruption initiatives in Ghana. So aside our civil society support, we are also providing technical assistance, or we are offering technical assistance to state institutions who require them. Again, we are also bringing the whole of UK government approach, including working with international partners on intelligence, supporting investigations into corrupt practices and asset recovery. We want to make it harder to move illicit funds between jurisdictions and make it even more likely that the corrupt will face justice and stolen assets will be recovered. We believe today's events, as Mrs. Nathi mentioned, is just one of those activities they are enrolling to ensure that Ghanaian voters and Ghanaian citizens at large are well informed about the ills of corruption and make demands on our political parties even as we approach December 7 elections, so that they are clear in their minds which of them is offering the best solution to address the menace. So on this note, we wish you well and fruitful deliberations, and do hope that this will not end in this room, but will be taken to our rural areas and places which are hard to reach. Those are the people who do not understand the big grammars we are here speaking, but you'll be able to break it down for them so that they can make informed decision and informed choices come December 7th. So thank you very much for the opportunity, and we hope it will be a success.
Thank you so much, Clara. We are grateful. At this point, I'd like to also acknowledge the presence of and representation from the Ghana Bar Association, the Office of the Chief Imam, the Natural Resource Governance Institute. We also have a rep from the World Bank. We also have representatives from the National Youth Authority, the Judicial Service, and the Economic and Organized Crime Office, IOCO. We'll get straight into action and try to answer the question, elections and anti-corruption. What is the next government's agenda? And to start off, I'd like to now welcome our expert panel for the first part of the discussion. Then we'll also get into the second part after that, where the political party's representatives will let us in on what exactly the next government will do when it comes to addressing the issue of corruption, how they hope to tackle it, and what exactly is contained in their manifesto, and what will be different is what we are hoping to hear. So to start off, I'd like to welcome the Executive Director of the Ghana Integrity Initiative, Mrs. Mary Ada. Please welcome her with a round of applause. We also have the founding president and CEO, Imani. Mr. Franklin Cudjoe is also with us. And then I also like to welcome the Executive Director, West Africa Civil Society Institute, WASI, Dr. Nana Asantewa Afagyinu. And I say the best for the last because it's his birthday. Mr. David Ofosudote, founder and senior partner, AB and David Africa. You should give him a birthday clap. So for obvious reasons, I'd like to start with you, Mr. David Ofosudote. I'm sure because it's your day. But really, first off, what would you say should be different, or what exactly your expectations are when it comes to dealing with corruption?
I think my expectations are actually what is not in the manifesto. Okay. So I don't pay too much attention to what is in the manifesto concerning corruption, because we are noted over the years as a people who don't mean what we write. And we do the things, we only write it just because we want to win elections. So I'm not surprised that you have so many promises and little emphasis on there. But what I expect is the things they see. I think they should talk more about corruption and how they will fight corruption. Because the more they talk about it, the more that the public is conscientized as to what it is that they intend to do. The other thing that I think will be important is for them to demonstrate how they will deal with the corruption that will occur within their regime. Because we are very good at dealing with corruption when we are not in power. And when we are not in power and we are criticizing those in power. Or when we are in power and we are dealing with those outside power. But the corruption often occurs when we are in power. And that's very important that we hear more about how they will deal with that. Because it will occur whilst they are in power. Yeah, and it always occurs. It's not about any particular political party. Very often when you have sessions like this, you will see that those who are in charge normally don't attend. It is those who are concerned about it who come and talk and talk. And I don't know whether when they are far away, they laugh at us or not. But somehow I'm sure they hear it would have been good if you have them and you are interacting with them. So, and the reason I'm concerned about this is that a lot of the people who are following just because of corruption. That's the very reason why they want to come into power. I mean, or want to stay in power either way. So it's important we pay attention to exactly those things. I mean, lastly, I think as a people, we must also talk about the fact that we are not immune from this. We are part of it. If a person who is talking against corruption receives some amount of money or receives some particular business deal and is good to him, then it's fine. It's only for some people, it's when they are not part of the deal that then they... So we lack a fair bit of principles. And I think it's important that we take the corruption fight beyond just the politicians and the manifestos into the private sector. Because in the private sector, there's a fair amount of corruption as well. If I'm in a private sector company and I'm giving a deal to somebody because the person is giving me some kickback, it is not different from the one in public sector. The only difference is that the public sector person is using my taxes to do that. And I think we need to pay a lot of attention to this, because it is part of the significant reasons why the economy is what it is. I mean, if you talk about inflation, and permit me for a second to talk about these two things. You talk about inflation and the dollar exchange. We underrate the extent to which corruption contributes to it. Because if a project is costing 10 cedis, mm-hmm. and I'm doing it for 15 cedis because the politicians want it that way, I'm actually taking more money out of the system than is due. And I have a higher disposable income. And therefore, I can spend that money. And that can cause inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, if I steal enough money, and because government is changing, I need to take a lot out of the system, I will need to buy a lot of dollars and ship it out.
Mm.
So it does have an impact. And it is these things I expect us to talk about. Mm. As for the issues about we have passed laws, etc., etc., I believe as the discussion goes on,
mm-hmm.
I will talk about it. The more laws we pass, the more the opportunity to cause the corruption.
And of course, we have political party representatives here. So definitely,
yeah, I'm aware,
they will
sure.
get to interact with us on it. Mrs. Ada, I know that the Ghana Integrity Initiative, you've done extensive work looking at the manifestos. David wants to hear outside what is not in the manifesto, but what is in the manifesto? Are there gaps? What you've seen in the manifesto so far, does it address the issue of corruption for you?
Thank you very much, MFA, and good morning to everyone here present. Thank you for coming. We see a lot of gaps in the manifestos that have been produced. Let's say we've done some assessments and we have looked at even the parties that have documented their policy statements, which we can refer to as some proper manifestos policies. And so in those, you realize that out of the total, many of them are good enough. However, we have a lot of issues that have not been attended to. We say gaps because in the first place, we had opportunity to engage. And so in the engagement and consultations with the political parties offered opportunity to civil society to do, the result therein we're expecting was that the reflections of what came out would be as robust and also as practical and proactive as we wished. Unfortunately, we didn't see that happen. For instance, if you take an issue around the law, we have talked about fighting corruption being difficult because we are a common law country, and so the issue of the reverse burden of proof becomes very difficult. So he who alleges must prove, and that is a difficulty for us because we are very much mostly unable to uncover the needed documentation to support whatever complaints we are making. So it becomes difficult. We in the Ghana Integrity Initiative have a center that we use to facilitate corruption reporting and also complaints that come from whistleblowers. We work with other sectors to ensure that this is done. We see that it's a big challenge. Citizens who are daring to report corruption have an issue because at the end of the day, they don't have enough evidence to support. So we spoke extensively to most of the political parties on this, that we need the law that supports this. So that if I say, for instance, beauty is corrupt, beauty the public officer has done something that needs to be investigated, we should not wait for her to give us all the evidence to support. And I remember the current president made that commitment as well sometime back, but that's what's under the bridge for us now. That was not done. We see commitments to compile all the laws to get one document like it happens in other jurisdictions. That is fine. Again, the other gap is the fact that if you look at our law sections 239 of the Criminal Offences Act and 240, as it defines corruption, it makes corruption or defines corruption wholly as what citizens see it, facilitation, bribery. We have issues around unexplained wealth, which we are grappling with. We see people who are cited, but then we are not able to investigate them because we do not have jurisdiction to do so under our current law. So that's another big gap which we need to work on. And as Mr. Fusidote has said, it's not about the law. It's about the quality of the law and the law being able to bite. If you look at all the manifestos, judging them by enforcement is only four commitments that speak to enforcing the manifesto commitments. We come again to the issue of asset declaration, which is the biggest when it comes to the issue of fighting corruption inexhaustively. All the political parties are willing to pass a law, but then we have what we call the Conduct of Public Officers Bill, which speaks to the issue of asset declaration, one, two, conflict of interest, and three, gift policy. We know as a society, our context and culture has shown that we tend to place all the burden on the fact that Ghanaians are generous people, we are welcoming, we accept gifts, we give them. Unfortunately, we do not have a very good policy in place or criminalizing that, some behaviors. And so it's difficult. We have a bill which started going out in 2013, if I'm correct. In the last parliament, that's the 7th parliament, it went to parliament again, the Conduct of Public Officers Bill, which would have helped a lot in the fight against corruption. Unfortunately, we do not see that happen. Yeah. And everybody wants to pass an asset declaration law again, which is not robust, because we want to see verification, and we also want to see publication. A public officer must be one who is transparent and accountable to the people who have put him there. Mm-hmm. Remember, the Constitution in Article 1 says power resides in us, we the people. And we the people are giving that power back to representatives. And so those representatives, we believe, should not have any qualms about making their lives public, because we want to serve the public. Again, another gap
in wrapping up.
We have, so wrapping up, is there are so many, so we will share the document. Another area we believe is a serious area we need to pay attention to is the area of service delivery.
Okay.
And we have everybody, be it a child or a grown up, procure services at one point or the other. But we see a lot of gaps in how we deliver services. Making, and he attests to it, that a businessman would want to facilitate his process. And so he would do quick wins here and there to be able to do that and capture some profit. We need to be able to have protocols that ensure that services that are being delivered are publicly available. The protocols around them are shared for everybody to know what is and what is not, what our requirements are, what are the processes. If I want to buy a land and register it, how do I do it? This would help. We say we are doing digitalization. Unfortunately, people do not understand this, and people who are thinking about bread and butter just want to go to the hospital or okay. send their children to school. So these are some of the gaps we have identified,
okay.
and we believe we should be. The political parties still have an opportunity to pay attention to them. Thank you.
It does appear there are a number of gaps that we've identified, but of course we've been launching a manifesto for some time now, and thankfully Mr. Kujo is with us. So Mr. Kujo, you've been looking at the manifestos. It was recently launched. Let me ask if they blew your mind this time, or it's still the same old story.
Well, thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. Let me just start off, well, take off from the anti-corruption conversation. First of all, the manifestos, as we've seen them, none of them actually, in fact, most of them are vague on corruption, really. The manifestos, none of the manifestos critically address the drivers of corruption in Ghana, and that's sad. The parties mostly focus on building systems instead of addressing the process that lead to corruption. None of the manifestos target reforming the excessive control of the executive over the public procurement system. And indeed, the last one, none of the manifestos touch on leveraging the Office of Special Prosecutor to deepen the fight against corruption. Maybe there's a good reason for that, right? The Office of Special Prosecutor has recently said that is, what did he even say in Chi? I don't understand that, but essentially saying that he's done his best, whatever happens. It tells you that, look, if you want to fight corruption, we did an article, I think, January 2017, and said, look, fighting corruption and waste starts from the presidency. And the reason was simple. All these big procurement projects you hear about, SML, Kearney GVG, and I'll tell you a funny story about Kearney GVG. There's actually a deputy minister in this administration who called me at midnight and said, listen, Franklin, there's this contract between the finance minister and the communications minister. Cabinet even doesn't really know the details, but it's going to pass. So get it. And I got it at midnight, and we got to work. That's how come we got to know about Kearney GVG. The process was shambolic. The entire procurement process was an aberration, really. And I thought that one of the things that I really suspected from my good friend Ursula, and then Ken, and they rammed through this whole thing. As we speak, Kearney GVG was supposed to do what? Catch telecom thieves, essentially telecom revenue thieves. The idea was that telecommunication companies were stealing revenues, so there was a need to monitor them. That contract was $176 million. As we speak, we've been paying $1.5 million every month since 2018. We've not seen a single report of how many telecom thieves have been caught, how much money have been saved to the state, and why we should continue paying that reclusive entity, private sector actor, $1.5 million every month. Right? Talk about SML. I mean, SML is another matter. I mean, I just don't understand. Now, there's a new form of corruption, really. We call it state capture through private sector actors. Of course, Kearney GVG is one of them, and then, of course, SML is also one of them. But there's some sort of justification, to borrow my colleague's Bryce Simmons' term, that we are enchanted because the processes or the project that these things go to support seem to be overly good. So the national ID card is a wonderful project. Why would you want to question why you are receiving cards for free? What's the point? I mean, if India did it for less than a dollar, 600 million people have been put onto the national ID card, why are we paying so much for the national ID card? That's the question we asked. Now, take it from me. I was one of those who actually supported, through being a member of the Danish Business Sounding Board, Private Sector Board, we actually somehow blessed that project when to Danida. That's some part of the money that went to my good friend Moses Bading. Moses is a good friend, yes, but I still have to ask the questions. How are we procuring these cards at this amount? So, multi-million dollar project, set up all these processes across the country. You can't fight that, right? Why are you fighting something like a national ID card? Some of these apps that are being launched, the Vice President is a beautiful gentleman. But when I talk to him, I see someone who is interested in making sure that the right things are done. He's probably not concerned about the other side of those who are actually benefiting and laughing all the way to the bank. Now, that kind of corruption is the type we are going to be dealing with right now. As of the other ones, those petty ones, and it's true, I mean, my good friend's lifelong work has been about fighting corruption, really. And she already mentioned some of the areas, bribery and all of that. We should be dealing with that. But at this stage, some of the, you know, corruption has debilitating, I mean, high-level corruption is what we're actually dealing with. I recall somewhere in 2006, I was in London and having a conversation about these issues that corruption on the continent kills. Sorry, corruption caused the continent almost 25% of its GDP, right? At the time, that was $149 billion on the continent's GDP. There was this guy from Christian Aid who was fighting me that why am I against government getting more aid? And I said, listen, and then he gave a statistic. He said, well, did I know that hunger or nutrition kills every child in Africa every 3 seconds? Well, I've done the calculation of grand corruption cost per second, and it was $4,900 per second. Now, if you got that, just suppose that over three, it may sound funny, it may sound propagandist, but that's the way we should have to analyze development. So if you do the high-level corruption, just ask yourself how much $176 million could have been used from Kelney to pay for school fees for kids, buy food for some of these kids, and all of those. Those matters, just let them sink. We are not against private actors making money, but just do it right.
Okay.
And on that, and on corruption, I think I just want to say something else about the... You asked me a question about a manifesto. We see manifesto as some sort of a legitimacy, some sort of barometer of legitimacy for political party promises. Promises are interesting and are great. I mean, I counted quite a number of promises. I've forgotten the numbers, but I'm sure it will come. And look, I seriously think we need a proper conversation about how to organize this state. There are so many promises. You tend to look at them and you ask yourself, what do we need as a state? What is the optimal size of money the state needs to prosecute the basics of life?
Okay.
Water, electricity, roads, healthcare. Those are the most important things, really. I mean, all other things that we keep jumping about every now and then, depending on the crowd the politicians see, say, oh, my bicycle. It becomes a sort of an ecstasy, really. And just to say that I've looked at the manifestos through and through. A bit of that which tries to address the issues that matter to people, that make it a bit more human or human-related, seem to be the ones that are related to the health sector, the water, as I said, maybe education.
I would like to focus on the governance commitment. So, really, dealing with corruption.
I thought you gave me a blanket check. So,
no.
Well,
no,
listen, on the governance issues, let me just deal with a few of those governance issues. I yield to the fact that the politicians have now woken up to the idea that we do need a downsized government. And I'm a firm believer in a limited government. I'm a libertarian, true and true. And so I like it. When I see that, I like it. So the MPP says 50 ministers cap. NDC says 60 ministers cap. Movement for Change says 40 ministers cap. Movement for Change has interesting ideas. My good friend Ayariga is here. I've read your manifesto, by the way. I'll speak to that some time back. And I see all these... some of the things these parties want to do originated from Ayariga. People do not know. His manifesto actually comes much earlier than the rest, but we don't give him that credit. But just stay on this point about the tapping...
Announced the club by the presidential candidates of the All People's Congress. Okay.
So the capping of this ministerial thing is important. Look, if the NDC and MPP get to do it really, and there's an amendment of the articles, is it 7-1, properly, I'm sure we'll be able to save close to 2.5 billion Ghana cedis. Because 1.3 billion for ministerial, if we... Oh, sorry. I'm very sorry. So if we manage to cap the ministers at 50 and maybe 60, let me go with the MPP formula because that seems to be a bit more in the middle. So 50, you tend to look at we did the calculation and it comes to savings of about 1.3 billion Ghana cedis for the duration of the 4 years, hypothetically 4 years. But then if you added that of... Article 7-1 holders that are supposed to be yanked off, something I totally wish we should do immediately. Honorable Gade is here, I don't know what he thinks. We should be making close to 2.5 billion Ghana cedis, right? We can spend about, at the time we did some sort of a referendum, I mean, when we were doing this constitutional review stuff, we spent about 6 million Ghana cedis to go around the country asking for ideas. If we extrapolate that and did some sort of a did rationalize for inflation, you'll be needing close to about 32 million Ghana cedis for a referendum of that nature. And I trust me, if you add Ghanaians trick. Article 71 holders be expunged from the emolument, they'll say yes.
Okay.
The point.
Thank you.
Point,
we'll get to delve deeper into what you found amongst others. Let me bring in Dr. Nana on this one as well. She's a citizen, not a spectator, and a CSO activist as well. And you've also been looking at it. At least we've identified the gaps. We've talked about a few of them, but really from your viewpoint, where you sit, where you stand, what exactly are you also expecting? Have you seen it? And I'm sure they're here. What would you want to tell them in terms of your expectations as well?
Okay, thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
I want to start with a story, okay? Because I think stories, even traditionally, stories really give out a message. In 2019, I was in Munich and had to take a bus. And when I took the bus, there was nobody taking any money. There was nobody checking anything. And I was surprised. So I went to see the driver afterwards to pay for it, and he told me, well, I mean, this at this time, well, you can pay, but really, we don't really, it's not something that we really check, we just check randomly. And when I got out of the bus, I was thinking, can this happen in Ghana, where you can go on a bus, sit on a bus, and just take a ride, and the assumption is that you've already paid, because there's a card that everybody's supposed to pay every month. And if you haven't paid and you have money, you will come up and you will pay. That is a culture of integrity. And it goes beyond just talk or slogans. And it is just ordinary citizens who are living up to that, you know, benchmark of integrity. And it made me reflect very deeply about Ghana and how low we have sunk when it comes to integrity. And integrity, the lack of integrity is the reason why we have corruption. And why is this so important for us to talk with political parties today about this? Because the fish, they say, rots from the head. We have chosen multi-party politics to help us choose our leadership in this country. And therefore, political parties, the mechanism of the political party system should be one that enables us to choose leaders who have integrity. And when our leaders have integrity, they are able then to inform the very structures that govern this country. The reason why Ghana is where we are today, when it comes to all the different, if you look at all the indicators where corruption is concerned, we have fallen so low. We have sunk. Now, I just want to quote just the Afrobarometer, latest Afrobarometer report, which now says that when you look at the executive, particularly the presidency, now people feel that 54%, you're looking at a corruption index, 54% of the people feel that the presidency is now a corrupt institution, as compared to 31% in 2012. Parliament, 51% of those who were surveyed, compared to 33% in 2012, believe that our parliament is corrupt. The judiciary, 44%, as compared to 35% in 2012. Now, that is not something that we must be very happy about. And that means that we must be looking at those who say they are now going to govern us and see how serious they take corruption. And how do we do that? By looking at what they are promising. Of course, integrity comes in here. What you promise, you must also keep. We also know that many of them say things that they do not do. But assuming that we are going to see them actually implement their manifestos, there are a number of gaps that we see, and I think it's important to mention them. Mary did touch on some of them, and I would reiterate a few and also add some of them. None of the parties that have claimed that they are going to work on asset declaration. If you look at their manifestos, none of them have addressed the specific demand that there should be verification and publication of assets declaration. That is one key point. There's no commitment that's been made to political party funding and campaign finance reform, which go and you know, this lack of commitment does go against both the AU and UN conventions that we have in relation to this. There's no commitment to political party and campaign finance reformation, for example, reviewing the political party's law and to compel political parties, you know, to file audited accounts to the EC, which already exists, but to include the candidates. Because a lot of the time, this financing does not necessarily go to the political parties. It goes to the candidates. So for the candidates to file, this, to have this audited account. The Section 29 of the Political Parties Act has the option to publish, the declaration of assets by political parties, but this is an option that the EC has. It's never been done, and we don't see any of the political parties committing to see that this is done in their manifestos. None of the political parties has committed to passing the Conduct of Public Offices bill into law. That's one area that we believe that has to be looked at as well. Also, I think Mary mentioned it, institutionalizing and enforcing the client service charter for public institutions, looking at what are the services that public institutions provide, what is the procedure for providing that service, what's the cost, what's the turnaround time, so that people will know these things and, you know, they don't have to put something on the paper or under the paper to get the public services that they need. Are we going to see in the manifestos? I mean, it's already done, but is that something that we could look at? Article 2864, if you look at the our constitution, looks at the issues around illicit enrichment. Are we going to see this criminalized? A colleague of mine, used to say that these days you don't talk about your children about becoming lawyers or doctors or engineers. It's either politician or pastor, because that is where the money is. Now, I mean, it's something that we need to look at. People are getting rich from going into politics, and that is one of the things that we need to be looking at. Conflict of interest.
Yeah.
Is this an area? I know that I've seen something in the NDC manifesto on that, on conflict of interest, but really, I believe that that is one of the areas that we have to take seriously when it comes to nepotism in public office. And how are we going to deal with that? How are the political parties promising to deal with that? So I'm saying that, yes, I think integrity is key. And to a large extent, Ghana has several laws, policies, regulations on, you know, that deal with corruption and institutions. How are we rather going to enforce these laws? How are we going to resource the institution, the Office of the Special Prosecutor? How are we going to ensure that it is resourced properly and so that it can do the work that it has to do? Okay. And overall, I would hope that we would go also just beyond the political parties. This really goes, it is something that we have to look at the very fabric of our society, and all of us need to address.
We have seven political parties with us today, and so we would want to wrap up briefly, and then we can bring them in to hear all that you've talked about and what exactly they are going to do differently, since they want to be make up the next government. But Nana ended on the bit about the laws, and David started off with that and mentioned about the laws and its impacts. You also talked about the impact of corruption on inflation. So really, what are the critical areas, David, briefly, that you want them to tackle when it comes to the fight against corruption? Seeing the gaps, so what should they do?
I think the biggest gap of all is actually where Nana ended. Mm-hmm. It is the failure to enforce what is existing. Last year, I had the privilege to be the speaker at the Constitutional Day lecture. And I made a statement I've repeated over and over, and I'm going to repeat that statement here. There's no law on earth which is so good as to prevent somebody who is evil-minded from doing evil. No law. And there is no law which is so bad as to prevent somebody who wants to do good from doing good. Now, I get worried when we advocate for more laws. And please permit me a few minutes. We've had laws on corruption forever, from the criminal code. Then we came to putting it in something in the constitution. Then under Shraj, we gave Shraj the power. Then we came to create SFO. And we changed the SFO to Yoko. And then we come to special prosecutor. And each one of them has had all these challenges. Then come to talk about World Bank support to pass public procurement act. I had the privilege of doing the policy framework for the public procurement act. I had the privilege of even working on the review. How many people have been sanctioned for corruption from public procurement, which is the